Welcome back to Lost in Theaters, the podcast about movies that have slipped through the cracks of pop culture. My name's Rachel. I'm here with Ruth.
Hi.
Roll.
And my name. Our podcast has three parts: the zero spoiler, the middle spoiler, and the major spoiler section.
Correct.
Yes. I realize I haven't said that in a while, so people should know.
Oh.
Yeah. I might put timestamps. You suggested I do that. So yeah. I'll put that maybe in the description.
Okay.
For people who want. So beginning with zero spoilers. Also, am I aggressively echoing to you? Or is it just me?
I think it's us.
Wow. Anyway.
I'll work on that.
Today's movie, Ruth. Are you ready?
You know I'm not.
It's called Clock Watchers. And it came out in 1997. Is that a significant year for you? 1997?
No.
What? It's a really significant year for me, because 97? That's the year my sister was born.
Oh.
You know, but we never remember the year of our birth, because we're twins.
The year of our Lord.
We're not twins.
We're not twins.
Okay.
People used to think we were twins.
It's true.
They must have assumed we weren't identical.
Yeah.
We were the same size.
That's true.
So maybe that was why.
Yep. I was born several years later.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
Bright blonde hair, and you had brown hair.
Yeah, and brown eyes, and you had blue eyes. So, there's that.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Okay, sorry. Clock Watchers. Based solely off the title, what do you think it's about?
Pretty mind-numbing stuff, really.
Hey.
Wait, what?
It's fascinating.
I mean, you just sit there watching a clock?
Yeah, yeah. Wouldn't that be horrifying?
It might be really soothing. I used to do that as a kid.
Well...
I used to sit and watch the clock tick.
You were in school, right?
No.
Or just life?
No, this was when we were still in Canada.
Did it have the brown rim clock?
Yeah.
I love that clock.
I would go out to the living room in the dead of night and sit and watch the
clock.
I'm
so sad that that clock is gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
This was directed by Jill Specher.
Jill!
And actually, it was co-written with, I think, maybe her sister, Karen Specher. And they've worked together on most of her work. So what I think is really interesting about this director is that, and writer, is she hasn't really worked on other people's projects.
Uh-huh.
But she's had a lot of, like, famous actors before they get particularly famous in her work. So she's done a film called 13 Conversations About One Thing. It looked like a really sad movie.
Oh, no.
Like a vignettes about why you think life is bad now kind of movie.
Huh.
But it looked like it was, you know, touching on philosophical ideas. People like that kind of thing.
Okay.
And actually, this movie, too, came out in 97, and it was very philosophical-ish. It aspired to be philosophical, whether or not it was. I'm not really qualified to say... But I didn't feel...
You aren't qualified to say whether it's philosophical?
I mean, because people can pretend to be philosophers all the time, you know? I feel like I'm one of those people who can pretend to be a philosopher, but I'm not really
I should let you know that out of all the common plebeians, so to speak, you are qualified to decide whether it's philosophy or not.
It stretches at something bigger than itself, the film does. It tries to... And it actually... It's kind of a motivational film...
Uh-huh.
It should be noted, it's set in 1997, so it feels very 1997. There are both box computers that look like cubes and typewriters in use.
Okay.
Yeah, but like the new typewriters, so they don't look fun in the same way, they're kind of the sad ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. The most recent film by Specher, Jill Specher, is called Thin Ice, and it came out in 2011. And so she hasn't done a lot of her own stuff. I mean, a lot of films. She's done about four or five and then did an HBO series.
Interesting.
But this movie, the most recent one, involves salesmen, violin, theft, murder, and blackmail. I saw the commercial and read a thing on it. And What's interesting is you can...
You said that, like, those are all good, appealing things that we should all subscribe to.
Well, it's more of a thriller kind of idea. And it's interesting because this movie also, it gives off thriller vibes. It never goes the step to, like, oh no, someone's been murdered. Okay. Or, like, it never, you know...
Never commits to murder.
Nobody commits espionage, like corporate espionage. And additionally, the music for the whole film isn't thriller music, but it totally could have been.
I'm sorry.
I haven't seen this movie called Midsummer. You heard about Midsummer?
The play by Shakespeare?
No.
Night's Dream?
No.
Dang it.
It's a movie about a cult. And from what I can get...
I find that less appealing.
Well, what I can get from things I've just heard people mutter, which
I
again...
I want fairies.
We should watch that on our other podcast, our summer special version, but apparently Midsummer...
Night's Dream.
Nope.
Okay.
It lulls you into this sort of, like... It lulls you into the mind of the person in the cult kind of idea, where it's like, this isn't bad, is it? This isn't bad? And then there's a moment when you're like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah.
You know? And it's interesting because... Oh, I keep saying interesting. I have to stop that.
Ooh, it's interesting.
Clock Watchers does this thing where you think everything is normal, and everything continues to be normal, and then it just sort of reveals that life's a little more complicated than normal. But it could have taken a turn to be something sobering, like, oh, you're a part of a cult now, or... oh, there's been a horrible crime that's happened, but it never took that turn, and I think it would be, it's very deliberate.
Okay.
And it's odd because I think it wasn't a blockbuster. It could have been a blockbuster.
Really?
In modern times. So there's this movie called Bombshell, like last year or the year before or something, and it was about, like...
2020.
It was about a news studio. People make TV shows about news and The Office, and like, The Office, for example. Workplace comedies.
Yeah,
workplace,
okay.
But then they've switched, and now there's also workplace dramas in, like, a really intense way.
I am not aware of this.
You're
I don't
not
think.
Aware of this?
I believe you. I'm just wondering what that entails.
Yeah, they there's, you know, high-stakes workplace situations. Mm-hmm. And what I think is so interesting is that this movie does not do that. It doesn't really escalate it.
It sounds boring.
Yeah, and I thought, when I was watching it, I thought, you could be bored if you wanted.
Huh. But you don't have to be.
But you don't have to be.
Okay.
You can look at the characters' lives and, I think for some people, it'll hit, like, way too close to home.
Oh.
And so they can't watch it. And for other people, I feel like feminists would be interested in this movie. They would be interested in analyzing the role of women in the workplace.
That alarms me. Not because feminists would be interested in this movie, but because you said that. And I don't know what you mean by feminist.
Oh, I mean people who are thinking about... Now, that's a really broad statement, I just realized.
The one you didn't say?
People who are thinking about women and who they are and what they're doing in the world, I just realized that qualifies.
That might be a little too broad.
That's real broad, yeah. But it does speak to that conversation.
Broad.
So funny.
Apologies.
So this stars four amazing actors, actually. Lisa Kudrow, who's in Friends. I think
Friends.
I haven't watched a lot of Friends, but she is one of my favorite parts of Friends. Anytime I've ever watched an episode, she's just I like her acting.
Okay.
She's fun to watch. And she's gone on to do other things since then. Also, a woman named Parker Posey, who was recently in the TV show Lost in Space. Toni Collette, who plays Joni in Knives Out.
I heard Joni.
Yeah, Joni.
Joni. Oh.
Joni.
For some reason, I thought you said Toni, and
oh.
I just heard you wrong.
No.
Knives Out.
Yeah.
Knives
she
Out.
She plays
Hang
in
on.
Knives,
Knives Out. Joni. Oh, which one is she?
I don't remember.
Dang it.
I know, I think it's the daughter.
Maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Alana Ubach, I believe is her name. And she plays in Legally Blonde and voices a character in Coco. So they've all had...
Coco!
All four of these actresses have had pretty successful careers after this.
Yeah.
I just think it's so interesting that they all started... Oh, I said it again. They all started here in this relatively... in the history of workplace television, which I think skyrocketed after The Office, of course, it isn't one that gets put on timelines like that. When people talk about workplace dramas and stuff, people don't bring up this movie, which I think it should be.
Really?
Just because it shows what it's like to be trapped.
Interesting.
And I think a lot of workplace stories are escape stories. You work your way to the top, or you make the best of a bad situation. But these characters and the way the story plays out is not, it doesn't play to that kind of nostalgia or that kind of hope in this way.
Okay.
It's got a kind of realism that can be painful, I think. But it's a kind of story that needs to be told, because sometimes I do think that we should have hope to get out of situations, and I think we need stories that have hope in them, but we forget what it's like to be in a situation that you don't know, if you can have hope, right? Like, sometimes you forget, and this story does a really good job of sort of capturing that kind of emotion.
Okay.
It's pretty intense. It does have a place on the Shakespeare scale, which is our scale for profanity.
Yep.
No cleverness, but it sort of, it edges on the, it doesn't, like, cuss all the time. But there's one particularly sharp moment. It's PG-13.
Okay.
But there is one particularly bad word. That so it has a place on the existence of the profanity side of the scale, which is a triangle, so it's more of a Shakespeare triangle.
The Bermuda Shakespeare.
Any questions? None. No questions. Wow. Okay.
I mean, you asked and I forgot everything that was in my head up to this point.
Oh, that's okay. Medium spoilers?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. The film is about... we recently watched The Godfather.
Yeah.
And at the end of The Godfather, I said, I did not see where this movie was going, but I see that we're here now, and I understand why we're here.
Uh-huh.
It was like that.
Okay.
You see all of the hints in the story leading up to the end, but I didn't know that's where we were going. All
right.
Which I don't know why that's going
in a medium spoiler. So it has a plausible result.
Yeah, exactly. Because we're medium spoilers, I don't talk about Paul. So you follow the life of a temp not stocks. It's a sort of nameless business. You know, and she's hired to be a temporary worker who, you know, does paperwork and stuff.
Okay, yeah.
And, like, Donna Noble.
Donna Noble. From?
Doctor Who.
Doctor Who.
Poor Donna. She's hired for this job, and she just, you see the, she develops some friendships there, and maybe some enemies, and you see how that plays out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird.
It is, and it's, you know, you see the painful dynamics of, like, the lack of respect that they get, and the, but it tries to be funny. That's what's so intriguing, and it does achieve a kind of office level, like, when the boredom drives you to do weird things. One of my favorite moments that just encapsulates this, that has nothing to do with the plot, but in one scene it just sort of, like, shows a random guy who's in the mail room with a file folder that he's attached hand pieces to, and he's sitting there, and you can't hear him whistling, but he's pretending to whistle, and he's playing it like an accordion.
Really?
And he's just sitting in that room, just...
So he's taped file folders to his hands.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's really, it's really poignant, you know, encapsulation of... When, like, you know, one girl paints her nails with whiteout, right?
Yeah.
Like, it makes you chuckle.
It's like school all over again.
Yeah, actually. It was pretty intense.
Yeah, so some people might really not like this film.
Yeah, exactly, because it doesn't have the interviews that The Office has. And it doesn't have the kind of character charisma in the same way that Jim, like, drives the plots kind of early on with pranks and stuff.
This could be triggering for some people.
Yeah, oh yeah,
I
for
see.
Sure.
Okay.
But it is...
Because you can't escape. There's no relief.
Yeah, but there is, like, it does make sense. And
yeah.
It is funny to see them do this. And the characters do have funny interactions.
Okay.
You know, making the best of the situation
and
kind of thing. But it is... It's odd because I don't know if workplaces like this are quite as prevalent these days. People, I think they are around, but people aspire more intensely beyond this, and they'll, like, get a job in food services before they get a job at this kind of place often,
interesting.
I think. I don't know. I see less movies about this kind of workplace.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I suppose that doesn't mean that they don't exist, of course.
Yeah.
They're just less talked about, I guess.
Yeah.
There's, you know, plots about her thinking about getting another job and, you know, lots of interweaving storylines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, you know, the more I think about it, the more similar to the plot, not in content, but in style of The Godfather. I really do think it has a similar kind of...
Really?
Where it seems very episodic in its storytelling, and then at the end, yeah, like I said, you get this sort of cohesive narrative.
Yeah.
And you see where it was all going, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's where the characters knew it was going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Major spoilers?
Let's
concerns?
Do
it. Okay. Major spoilers, here we go. Brrrr! And
ding.
Yay, there it is. So it begins with a ticking clock, of course.
Of course, duh.
Well, it's called Clock Watchers. You'd expect nothing less, really.
I would almost expect them to be staring at an hourglass.
Wow. Because it's also... Is an hourglass a clock?
Ooh. No, it's not. Dang it.
It's a time-measuring device.
Yeah, but clocks are very specifically circular and have hands.
Okay,
so a
digital,
sundial.
Digital clock.
Mm. Yeah, but it's always, like, digital clock.
Wow. We've just stumbled upon this very bizarre.
I could be wrong.
I think you're right. Oh, my goodness. Okay, we'll think about that. So, opens with a ticking sound, and there's a woman standing at a reception desk.
Uh-huh.
And then the clock turns 9. It goes... Tick,
oh.
And the guy puts down his magazine and is like, "What do you want?" And she says, "Oh, I think I'm supposed to work here." She's
a
very timid
yes.
character. And he says, "Sit in that chair till someone gets you." And so she sits down, and... And the film is very stylized visually, so there's these long shots of her sitting there and people passing, saying things, people looking through watering things. And it's interesting, it's not as stylized as, like, Wes Anderson, but it is very...
And what does Wes Anderson do?
He does very bright colors and patterns, and he has got a particular look in his costumes, and a kind of surrealist nature.
Okay.
So it isn't surrealist, but it is very very long visuals.
Okay.
So then she's finally taken to her desk 2 hours later, and the woman says, why didn't you come get me? And she says, because I thought I was supposed to stay here. Sorry.
Yeah.
The woman says, okay, you transcribe these papers, then make 3 copies of them, and then she says, and make sure that you don't mess up. These papers are very expensive.
Oh.
The poor woman proceeds to mess up twice, and then goes to the bathroom and throws out the papers, because it's a typewriter.
Oh, no.
And so she just sort of, like, puts them in the bathroom trash, because
oh my God.
She can't do anything else with them. Then she goes to the copier. There's a woman in there who's putting paper clips in the copier. This one's broken, she says. You have to use the other one. As she puts more paper clips in the copier.
Okay.
Then she goes to, she's stamping forms, and some guy tells her how to do it the right way, and she's like, okay, you know, that sounds fine, and, then she, well, actually, she doesn't say that, but you can tell in her attitude that she's not upset about this or anything.
Yes.
Then it cuts to her getting on the bus to go home, and she finds a penny. She goes home. And this is when the first voiceover happens on the bus, and she talks about, like, ways of looking at time.
Huh.
It's interesting, and this is why it has a kind of philosophizing vibe.
Yeah.
It's the character is retrospectively talking about her time at the job and stuff. But you never see her retelling it to anyone.
And but so it's presumably her voice.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so then the next day is when, so she's trying to, she has this phone call and she takes it and she doesn't really know what to do because the guy's in his office not doing anything, but is, and then this is when she meets her first friend who then like walks her through the ropes of how it works and says they don't take calls before 10.
Okay.
You know, takes her to the coffee room where there's like a can of, like a donation can for coffee, and one of the work people has like this really alarming cup.
Oh.
Not horrifying, it's just a kind of a pervy cup, you know, with a weird design on it. Inappropriate for a workplace. She introduces him to the guy with the rubber band ball who's really possessive of the office stuff and like pens and things. And some person tells her what to do, the woman who's leading around, she's like, I'm not going to be here forever, you know, get that person right there is going to write me a recommendation, it's going to be amazing, you know, and then the guy doesn't even know her name, as she tells her to do a whole bunch of stuff, but she's still hopeful, right, so that it didn't, like, get her down.
Okay.
He shows her the filing room, and then lunch. And she's like, that's the other 50% of this job. Lunch. And so she has lunch with her friends. Who, one of them wants to be an actress, and that's the printer lady. That's played by Lisa Kudrow.
Okay.
And then there's another lady who talks about the time that she temped at a bank and then pressed a button that called the police. And they said, don't press the button, but it was just sitting there. And she's like, and I just kind of had to. And I was there for a month, and I just pressed the button.
Oh, my gosh.
Very chaotic conversation. And then we were introduced to the mailroom guy, who's a little creepy, and asks Jane, the girl who pressed the button, out. But she's, like, engaged. And you're like, what's the deal, man? But over the course of the film, he mellows out a little bit.
Yeah.
He's just one of the guys at the place, and he's actually not that alarming, but he does give off kind of creepy guy vibes at first.
Uh-huh.
It's a curious kind of character quality in that way.
Does it have anything to do with how the main character perceives him? Do the people also change as she changed? So, like, because her perspective changes?
Yeah, well,
Or are they also experiencing legitimate growth?
She experiences the most change, and I think her perspective changes. That's a really good insight, I think. Okay. You kind of had suspicions about the people who she's with at first, and then you're like, I don't know, maybe it's going to be fine, and then it is kind of fine, and then it just, as she learns more about them, the story progresses, and she changes, and the characters don't, the other words, people around her, she just comes to know more.
Okay.
That's I didn't think about that having, because I thought about that with her friends, this group of friends, but not with this mailroom guy. So, the the four ladies, like, go back to their desks, and they're gonna go out to happy hour that night. It's what they do on Wednesdays. they go back to the desk, and they're just, like, watching the clock, you know? Sitting yes. there waiting. One of them is popping those bubble pop uh-huh. things. One of them is just, they're just holding their purse, staring. Oh. They're all staring at the clock, waiting for yeah. 5 o'clock. Happens, and they leave, and they go to this kind of odd bar. It's got, like, a buffet and a bar, huh. and, you know, one of the guys is creepy, but, you know, the actress lady takes his card, and then poor Jane's husband said he was coming, but then he doesn't come, and then he comes late, and, the new girl for the new temp, she, mm-hmm. she takes this little monkey from the cup when they go. There's this, like, little, it hooks on the end, uh-huh. really nice, like. Also, the friend who first introduced her to everything, she takes, because Jane is getting married to this guy, who left her at the...
Jane's not the main person?
No.
Okay.
No. But she, like, steals these glasses for her and puts them in her purse, and, you know, they're just... going about their business. They end up at a seance that night, and the lady at the seance is...
to spice up your life, you know?
You know? She's like, you gotta... what's the word?
Don't go to seances.
Okay. oh, she says something kind of inspirational to the new girl at the office.
Okay.
And she's like, you gotta... if you want things to change, you gotta make them change, you know? Go for it. meanwhile, there's this guy who gives her a nice... do some printing, and then she makes cupcakes for her friends.
Aww.
It's kind of fun, and they all go home, and then Lisa Kudrow's character and the main character share a bus home, and... Mm. It's funny because she's going to be an actress, so she practices her faces on the bus.
Yeah.
They have a good time. And meanwhile, the new girl's dad wants her to get a job at, like, a bank or something.
Yeah.
And so he's encouraging her to do this. And he thought that, she sends in, she says that she's sent in this, what's the word?
Resume application
to a company, and he's really excited for her, and but she's not really interested.
Yeah.
And you know, it continues with everyone just sort of sitting around in the office doing stuff. Like, this is when the scene where the guy playing the fake accordion, painting nails, one girl's carving into the desk, her friend is carving something into the desk, and another one is spinning in the chair.
Yeah, and, that'd be me.
Oh, and they're just sitting there, and the time passes. And here's the thing about the music.
Yeah.
The idea is that the music actually is the music being played in the office.
Okay.
And it's weird dear. Synth bubble music.
Yeah.
You know, kind of airport music the whole time. It's like, it's supposed to help our brains.
Oh, dear.
And so it's really interesting because during these scenes, that's when the music is playing.
Okay.
And when they're in the office. So anytime they're in the office, think that weird music is playing.
Yeah.
So they eventually go, and the voiceover then says, it's like we're just waiting for something to happen.
Uh-huh.
Sure enough, something did happen. The money gets stolen from the coffee tin. The donations for coffee. And nothing really comes of this. They go out, they continue to go out. They're like, I hope they don't dock it from anyone's pay, you know, just because.
Yeah.
And then they come back from lunch, and Jane's card is missing, the check-in card.
Mm-hmm.
And at lunch, they saw this girl, this new temp.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, oh, well, I'll probably go over and say hello later, you know, because she's new. But then they find out that she's actually the assistant to the head, the head of the company, which uh-huh. means that they didn't promote a temp. They hired another person, and they're all upset at her, of course. They're kind of upset, and there's a lot of scenes here where nothing really happens, you know?
Huh.
But over time, over these scenes, you get the idea that the temp kind of wants to be their friend. The new assistant wants to be their friend, but they're not really having it. Additionally, a whole bunch of stuff goes missing from the office.
Oh.
Paperweights, lighters, someone's dictionary stand, just tons of stuff has gone missing.
Someone's a kleptomaniac.
Exactly. And the temps feel like everyone's looking at them, but they think that it's the assistant.
Yeah.
Who's doing it. And they're like, why don't they think it's her? You know, they're all upset. It should be noted throughout the whole film, the friend from the beginning who showed her the ropes, you know, she does weird stuff like, they go shopping for clothes at one point and she switches the tags so that the thing that they want is now on sale.
Uh-huh.
You know, she always does these kind of edgy behaviors. And stuff keeps getting stolen. The new girl's umbrella gets stolen. I call her the new girl but she's long since not new.
What's her name?
I don't remember.
Rachel!
Which I think is important for the film, and I'll explain why. I'm calling her friend from the beginning her friend because it comes in later.
Okay.
I could go on for a long time about this movie.
Yeah.
Because there's just all these details. But I go on for a long time, I can be like, and then the scene changed and they did something else, and then this happened. One of their bosses dies of a heart attack.
Oh.
Which means that they don't get, they can't get a letter of recommendation from him.
Oh.
Which is, it's a weird revelation because that means that they're more worried about, well, they're more heartbroken that they can't get this recommendation than that he died.
Yeah.
Which is a sad character quality, but it shows that they don't, that's the conditions that they're working in.
Yeah.
So, they're sad about this. Two of the friend and the new girl, they find out that Jane's fiance is cheating on her.
Oh.
And they go to her shower, and it's, you know, tense.
Yeah.
They also find out that, the three original people already knew this, but the main character finds out that the actress lady is just pretending to be an actress. She doesn't actually get auditions or shows or anything.
Hmm.
She says she's got a small part in a thing, but their friend, the friend character, is just like, you know, it's all made up. It's all in her head. I keep trying to go to her shows, but they always get canceled, you know?
Interesting.
The suspicion about the temp stealing stuff is getting more and more intense.
Oh.
And they take away all of the, like, dividers between the desks.
Oh.
So there's no privacy anymore.
Mm.
And you can't go up to the floor after 5 o'clock.
Okay.
They're discouraging conversations that are just casual. It's just not a really good work environment at all. It was okay before, but... No, it was bad before, but it's terrible now. They don't go to lunch together. On one of the days, you know, one of them goes off to smoke something with somebody else, and another one. Jane has lunch with her fiance, and the actress lady just goes off and does her own thing, and so the new girl eats lunch alone in the bathroom for the first time ever.
Yeah.
She finds out that the actress thinks that she's pregnant because they meet in the bathroom. The reason she was jamming the printer is because, she wanted the repairman to ask her out.
Okay.
I know. It was, like, this very convoluted plot, which the secretary ends up foiling because, she can fix the printer.
Yeah.
Oh, it's unfortunate. The voiceover talks a few more times and says, like, it's horrifying how, like, doubt creeps in, the voice in your head creeps in, and you don't see it coming, and you feel so small in the world, and everyone's just watching you. At this point, it's a really curious parabola. It goes up, and then it goes down, like a hill, a parabola.
Huh.
And because the new girl started out really scared, and then she kind of got confidence with her friends, having a good time. And
yeah.
then at this point in the movie, she is once again really timid and scared.
Yeah.
She gets called into the office for her supervisor, and her supervisor tells her that she needs to, fix her skirt. It's too high on her legs. It's very not that high. So she ends up, like, stapling it. It's really sad. She just is having a bad time. And it's interesting because the film doesn't do this with the music. It just feels suppressive in a really intense way. They're interviewing people about the robberies, the thieves, thief situation. She has her interview. She doesn't say anything. It's a really hard interview to watch. She just sits there and they're like, so it could be anybody, you know? Like, do you have any ideas? Any thoughts? She thinks maybe it's her friend who's that, you know, taking stuff.
Yeah.
She thinks maybe it's, you know, the secretary. She doesn't know. Her own notebook has been stolen at this point.
Yeah.
She was taking notes on, like, who it could be, you know?
And yeah.
Doing all this stuff, but, and then, the friend from the beginning says, you know what we should do? We should have a strike. We should all just not come into work tomorrow and see how much they need us. However, everybody comes in except her.
Oh.
And so the next day she comes back. And she's like, oh, they're going to see how much they needed us. But instead, the police are searching their desks, which is, I don't think that'd be allowed today. Today, that would be, I don't know, man. So they're searching their desks. It's a clear violation of their privacy or something.
Uh-huh.
They're very upset. And I got it mixed up. So they search their desks and then they hold the strike. And actually, during that, the new girl saw that the little monkey she'd taken mm-hmm. from the restaurant was in her friend's desk.
Mm-hmm.
So the next day, after the strike, when they come back, or when she comes back, the supervisor comes up and says, I'm afraid we don't need you here anymore. This is her friend. And she's like, you don't even know my name. And this is when we learn that her name is Margaret.
The new girl?
No. The one, her friend.
Oh.
Who's... was gonna get the recommendation, got looked over, the whole thing, and Margaret is very upset, of course, and she, you know, it's a really intense scene, but her other temp friends don't support her, and she's like, why don't you believe me, some friends you are, because they think she might have done it, but sure enough, the new girl looks in her desk and sees that actually she also has the monkey still, which means that they both had this thing.
Yeah.
And the voiceover says that she wished she had done something.
Hmm.
I actually, it was very, it was a very intense moment because she doesn't do anything to help.
Yeah.
And sometimes that happens. You see something bad happening and she doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
She doesn't know what to do, or she just didn't. Which was alarming, but, and, you know, she thinks about that sometimes, and this is sort of the last major scene with the four of them. The voiceover says that they part ways, the actress friend gets transferred, Jane gets married, and, you know, our main character just stays in the office switching desks for a while. She, one day she realizes that she's sitting at Margaret's desk.
Yeah.
And it says, I was here in the desk, where she was carving in the desk.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, a carrot, and then it says never on top, so it says, I was never here.
Yeah.
Which is a horrifying, you know, idea.
Huh.
That all her work didn't amount to anything, you know, nobody was really looking at her. Then, our main character catches the temp stealing something. Not the temp, the assistant.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she knows.
Yeah.
And she puts that sticky note on the desk and says, a sticky note that says, I want my notebook back, because she doesn't say that loud.
Yeah.
Gives her back her notebook. Then at lunch the next day, our main character burns her notebook in front of this woman.
Oh.
And then imitates her, because there was this weird dynamic where the lady at the desk was imitating our main character, kind of in like clothes and stuff. It was odd. Then she sees her boss on the street randomly.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't recognize her at all.
Yeah.
He was one of the nice ones.
Yeah.
And he did not recognize her. And she's like, that assistant, she just wanted to, like, be somebody and, like, did stuff that was wrong. But she just wanted this, so. Her dad had bought her a suit for an interview. So our main character dresses up in this suit, goes to her boss and says, "Can I have a letter of recommendation?" And he says, "Oh, sure." And she says, "Actually, I've typed one up. Could you sign it?" And so he looks down and he signs it and he says, "Good luck, Margaret," as he hands her back this letter.
Uh-oh.
And then our main character addresses the letter to Margaret, like sends it in a letter to Margaret. So she got Margaret's letter of recommendation that she'd always wanted.
Yeah.
And then she goes back to her desk and she's scratching out the never in the desk. So it says, "I was here."
Yeah.
And she kind of looks up at the camera at the end, and that's the end.
Interesting.
And throughout the movie, there was, like, moments where she could have continued to, like, pursue this job at this other company, like, a paying full-time job that wasn't a temporary position. And she just doesn't... It's like she doesn't have the will, or she just doesn't want to, or it's... the emotion there, it's very it's almost inexplicable, right? Like, she doesn't have the ambition to, like, "I'm gonna go get this thing," and at the end it's as though she has this ambition for her friend. She's like, "I want to set this right." So it definitely evokes particular trappedness. What do you think from what I've said?
I think a lot of people would be frustrated because they don't understand why she doesn't just leave or do something or demand, like she does at the end. "No, I've written it." Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't have any proactive impulses.
Yeah.
Which is what a lot of male employees would have done.
You think?
Yes. Because it's part of that workplace culture is... you do it.
Yeah.
There are, of course, women who also know how to do this.
Right.
But that, just on, I don't know, some of the discussions I've noticed, even on, like, Tumblr places, it's, that is the main thing, is that it's a cultural difference. And how people are taught to live for themselves if they're not encouraged to have, I don't know, their own desires even.
Yeah, yeah.
That will really cripple you.
Yeah.
And keep you satisfied with where you are.
Mm.
Or you'll discover you're not satisfied and it's pretty inexplicable.
Yeah.
What are you supposed to do next?
Yeah.
Like, your imagination is sort of broken.
Yeah.
It's still there, it can get better, but, like...
Right.
You're already starting from a different place...
Yeah.
...than people who don't have that advantage. Or, it's not even an advantage, it's just sort of a... baseline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think it's an important film for that reason, in that it captures this kind of emotion. I think it's really bizarre that it isn't more well-known. Especially with the actresses who are in it.
It might be because it's so difficult, and it's hard to know what to do with.
There's the people who are frustrated at her for not doing anything, and the people who experience her emotions,
who still can't do anything.
They just don't want to watch that. That's, no. That is not that sort of thing you want. No. You want something else.
Yeah.
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 On a different note, it also, if you haven't seen any of Loki yet, right?
I haven't.
Okay, have you seen the commercials, though?
I saw one.
Okay, so they, you know how the TVA, okay, the vibe of the workplace that Loki is in the
movie, yes,
is the very similar to this. It's so funny, the way that...
So check out the Loki trailer.
You should, if you want to feel for the workplace's aesthetic.
All right.
Anyways, thanks so much for listening.
Sort of a sad one.
It's a sad one, but I think it's a good one.
Yeah.
Anyways, I almost said watching because you can watch us on YouTube. We have special summer specials. Special summer specials. Ooh.
They're special.
We have lit summer specials coming out on YouTube, which show us talking about movies that have not slipped through the cracks of pop culture. But you'll notice we talked about The Godfather. And if you want to know our thoughts on The Godfather, go to YouTube. You'll see us there. All right.
It's a trip.
You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Lost in Theaters. Our song
today is...
Thanks very much for listening.
Those were just fucking sounds. Bye.